Welcome to AMA Edgewise. I'm Dave Summers. AMA Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association.
Christopher Serdak is a recognized expert in collaboration and content management, information security, regulatory compliance, and cloud computing with over 20 years of professional experience. Currently, he's the global subject matter expert, e-discovery and data analytics for Hewlett-Packard. We were just saying, boy, that's some kind of job title. How does one come about getting a job title like that?
I actually have absolutely no idea. And in fact, I was having the conversation last week with a state senator who had asked what my job title was, and I said, I'm not really sure. And in this day and age, I believe that if you can firmly describe your job, you're probably on the verge of being obsolete, because the world is moving so quickly that if you can articulate it very well, then probably, again, going to be looking for a new job pretty soon.
That's the conundrum of being a specialist. One only is a specialist for so long.
Or try to drive to be a specialized generalist, which I would argue is probably more of what I am these days.
You've written a great new book entitled Data Crush, How the Information Tidal Wave is Driving New Business Opportunities, which is published by Amacom, a subsidiary of the American Management Association. Okay, I'll bite. What is Data Crush and what's causing it?
So Data Crush is something that probably every single person listening to this experiences every single day. You wake up, and before you practically open your eyes and put on your glasses, you're probably looking at your smartphone, digging through 100, 200 emails, going through text messages that you got overnight, checking your Facebook post, this absolute inundation of data coming at us in our world, and that we're also beaming out into the world, whether we recognize it or not. And that's very much a two-way communication that a lot of people don't recognize necessarily. But in this world that is absolutely awash with data about ourselves, what we're creating is an environment for us as individuals and for organizations. If you have any hope of surviving, you need to not only tap into that data, but you need to start putting it to work. So that's this crush, this sense of overwhelming speed, mass, and volume of this information, and the need to harness it if you want any hope of surviving.
If you were to distill down this concept of data crush to a one word, what would that word be and why would you choose that word?
And the one word that comes immediately to mind is disruption. I use that word very specifically because the availability of this information is going to fundamentally change some key aspects of our society. And that sounds like a grandiose statement, but it really isn't. It's going to fundamentally change many aspects of our society that we have come to expect and that we've come to rely upon. And those things are changing before our eyes, whether we recognize it or not, making institutions of our society go through radical change either right now or they will go through some radical change in the next 5 to 6 years, leading to tremendous disruption throughout our society and throughout the economy.
Are there specific segments of the economy or certain industries or certain social segments that are more affected by this than others?
So what I find fascinating there is that in my role that I have, and I absolutely love my job because I get to do this, I meet with executives of Fortune 1000 companies, state, local, and national governments, et cetera, on a weekly basis. And what I find is consistent is that no matter what niche of society we're talking about, it's affecting absolutely everyone. And I'll frequently come across business executives that say, well, my industry's different. We're not being affected by that. We don't sell to consumers or we don't deal with consumers and so on. This perspective of, well, we're different, so it's not going to affect us. And what I find is, with a little bit of analysis of that particular industry, business, whatever, is saying that, you get the sense that they're very much whistling past the graveyard, where they just do not recognize the fact that they're going through fundamental changes. And so it really touches everyone. The analogy I give is how many people in America, let's say, today don't buy something from Amazon on a fairly regular basis. So if I'm talking to an oil and gas company or I'm talking to a hospital or whatever, their view is, well, I don't compete with Amazon, so I'm different. That may be true in terms of your business, but your customer interacts with Amazon on a daily basis. They interact with Google on a daily basis. They interact with all these different websites that are absolute cutting-edge leaders in the world of data analytics. And they generate an experience for their users that those users now expect of everyone, regardless of what service or product they're buying. And so it touches absolutely everyone. Even state and local governments, amazingly enough, are starting to feel the pressure to perform like an Amazon. And that's something that you wouldn't normally expect.
Okay, so how does the availability of all this data affect individuals? How will our daily lives change?
I think all of us that are connected to the internet even a little bit now are already sensing this change in our daily lives. It's not necessarily that we touch all that data all the time, but certain aspects of our lives are becoming simpler. Certain aspects of our lives are happening in an automated fashion without us really having to make decisions on it. And it seems like we're being exposed to much more convenience, much more availability of things that we want or need. In many ways, it feels very good. It feels kind of neat when I get an electronic coupon when I'm standing outside of Starbucks. Hey, you know, thanks. I didn't know that I wanted a cup of coffee, but here I go. The flip side of this, though, is that none of us is truly aware of how much of our data is leaving us and going into the hands of who knows who. Our information is constantly being collected every second of every day, every single thing that we do. In my current role, I get to see the extent to which this is true, and it's actually staggering, where our actual thoughts are being collected, analyzed, and are being used so that we can actually have our thoughts changed. Mm-hmm. So there's this perception of delivered value that we receive from companies using the information that they collect about us. But there's a growing sense, I think, if you look at the Snowden case and the NSA and the exposure of just how much the government is tracking, this growing sense of unease, this growing sense of maybe people know me too well. Maybe these different companies know me a little too well, and they're getting a little too intimate. And I call this creeping up on creepy. Mm-hmm. We're getting closer and closer to this point of inflection where you did something really cool that I enjoyed, turns into you went too far and now you freaked me out.
Well, there's this story that's been, I first read about it in the New York Times. I think the author was Charles Duhigg, and he has since written a book called Habits, but it's the story that keeps popping up when it comes to stuff like this, the creepy side of it, and that's Target.
I refer to that in Data Crush as well. It's kind of a famous one related to this.
Exactly, and I'm just thinking, you know, how would I react, you know, being the father in that home? Why are you sending me this stuff for new mothers, you know what I mean? Why are you sending me diaper coupons? What the heck is going on here? So there is definitely that creepiness aspect to it.
Well, and the thing that should be a little bit intimidating if you're aware of the story is that happened like 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And this technology that we're dealing with and the volumes of data is growing so rapidly, so quickly, and advancing at such a pace that that sort of thing is rudimentary now. And in fact, if you're a company other than Target and you're not doing the same, you're probably on the verge of going out of business. Mm-hmm. And you see this with other retailers like JCPenney's, et cetera, where because they didn't get into this race early on and start to leverage it, they're hopelessly lost. And this is the other part of the disruption factor, where because those people that start to leverage data about their customers early on, they gain such insight, they actually build an unassailable advantage that their competition can't catch up with. As long as they keep this frenetic pace of learning more and more about their customers and getting more and more intimate as they go. The challenge is to keep up that pace, but again, stay on the right side of that razor's edge and not go too far into the creepy side, as was the example in the Target example.
Chris, are you making a case for companies seriously recruiting and hiring lab-coded data scientists?
So what's funny there is that in my blog post for HP, I actually have a blog post where I talk about data scientists, and if anyone actually finds one at some point, or if anyone can actually define what one is, the industry would probably be obsolete, to my opening statement. There's this idea of what a data scientist is out there, and nobody knows necessarily what it is, but everyone wants one. In my mind, without question, the need to have people that are data literate is absolutely critical. But in my mind, that person is a little bit different than what people traditionally think of as a, quote, data scientist. Many people are viewing hardcore statisticians, people that really understand the math and can crunch the math and look at a body of data and apply statistical techniques to it as a data scientist. And I don't argue that necessarily because I work with those sorts of people all the time. But the truly valuable individual is going to be a business person or an operational sort of person or a marketing person who is at the same time data literate. Mm-hmm. Because where we really get huge insights from having access to all this information is asking the right sorts of questions and asking different questions, because the answer is embedded somewhere in the data. Mm-hmm. It always is. And in fact, I had said with some people before, if you have enough data, the mundane becomes fascinating. Mm-hmm. And it really does. Mm-hmm. But you need someone who knows how to ask the right questions. Mm-hmm. And that person poses those right questions to the, quote, data scientist, who then crunches the numbers. And so what many people in the industry have forecasted, and I firmly agree with this, the really valuable folks going 3 to 5 years into the future from now are going to be the people that understand business, have a good business sense, and they understand data, and they understand mathematics and modeling so that they can merge those two.
Okay, well, companies are creating better shopping experiences with enormous amount of data that's available now. They're collecting on consumers. Many of us see this as intrusive and invasive to our privacy. And you were talking about Snowden before, but on the retail purchase side of that, I mean, should we as individuals be worried? Should we just say no the next time? If the option comes up a lot of times to opt out, am I serving myself better by opting out, or should I just go with the flow?
So what's interesting, and I'm asked this question all the time, the fact that you choose to opt out at a point in time becomes analytically and statistically interesting. And so if you don't opt out, then you go with the flow, you're part of the general population, you don't stand out. It's when you opt out, it's when you say, I've had too much, it's when you say, I'm creeped out, that you start changing your behavior. And we see this. And when I say we, I mean the industry, businesses that are doing data analytics. And we'll actually see that event where you change your behavior, and that becomes more fascinating. So we actually will focus more upon your behavior from that point forward, so we get a better understanding of how we creeped you out. How did we go too far? Why did you change your behavior, and how did you change your behavior because of it, and how do I get you back? And the analogy I use, it's like a herd of zebra on the Serengeti. You know, how do you not become lion food? Stay in the middle of the pack. Don't stand out. Don't be different. And so it's a really fine line if you are at the point where you're a little bit creeped out or companies are being a little too intrusive in how they're using your data. How do you protect yourself, so to speak, but also don't stand out further for even deeper analysis of your psyche?
That's interesting.
It's pretty creepy.
Well, it is. And let me see if I understand exactly what it is you're saying. I mean, you're saying do the job, do the due diligence, ask all the right questions, but just be very, very, very aware of the creepy line.
As a business, absolutely. And I'm working with many people in the state, local, and federal governments. Because of the concern about this, we're actually working on authoring some bills that we intend to put before Congress to start addressing some of the privacy concerns. Everyone's talking about the NSA and how intrusive they are, and so there's a lot of focus on the NSA, and I suspect over the near future, 1 or 2 years, the NSA may be reined in a little bit. Nobody's talking about the companies that collect all the other data.
I was about to say, should we be more afraid of Amazon?
You should be dramatically more afraid because they are unregulated. There's no discussion of how to manage the data they're collecting. They don't need to disclose what they collect, how they collect it, when they collect it, how they use it, or when they use it.
Mm-hmm.
No controls whatsoever. And I think it's fascinating, too, that the NSA buys the data from Amazon, Google, et cetera. They don't collect it all themselves.
Sure.
They actually buy it from those companies that were pinging their websites every minute of every day.
Only a few short years ago, I sort of smiled to myself when I heard that one of Google's mottos was do no evil or something to that effect. And I'm like, you know, I'm not laughing as hard at that as I used to.
Well, evil's in the eye of the beholder. You know, one of the things that I'll say with people is technology has no morality. It just is. You know, is fire good or bad? Is electricity good or bad? Is the internet good or bad? It all depends on how we use it. And so Google is, I admire them for making that statement, but their perspective of what's evil may not match my own. But I'm certainly using their website, and if we have a disagreement on the definition of evil or good, they win, not me.
I'm not interested in name dropping here right now, but are you aware of companies right now that are seriously behind on this type of stuff and maybe even at the point of failing because they're not taking this intensive data issue seriously?
On a weekly basis, read the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the LA Times, the companies that you read about on the front page that are doing poorly, this is why. That's, again, a very broad statement, but I truly believe it. Back to the disruption thing. The disruption that data is causing, data is now what capital used to be. If I had $1 billion, I can make a successful business. If I had factories, I can make a successful business. Data is that new currency. And if you're not using that currency, if you're not what we call monetizing your data, someone else will.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be 10 guys sitting in a garage in India. And in fact, it probably is 10 guys sitting in a garage in India. They're taking your data, they're monetizing it against you, and all of a sudden, even if you owned all the factories to produce whatever the widget is, you are disintermediated from your customer.
Mm-hmm.
And you no longer own the most important asset that is across the entire value chain that you thought you were supplying to.
So when you're talking about disruption, you're pretty much using almost like the Clayton Christensen definition of the word disruption.
Exactly so. Just comprehensive things that you thought that you could rely upon for your entire career, you can no longer rely upon. And in fact, hanging on to those beliefs is going to be more of a detriment than an asset.
All right, let's end on a positive note here and say, and I know enough of the paranoia and the creepiness, let's end on a positive note and say, what new types of business opportunities can companies do and survive and thrive in this age of the data crush?
A nearly endless opportunity. It opens up entire new markets, entire new field of value generation for customers, entirely new sorts of relationships that you can have with customers. And back to that intimacy thing, you know, if you stay on the right side of that continuum of creepiness, intimacy, you can actually have customer delight, which I think is what we end up wanting. I mean, when you can actually anticipate your customers' needs, deliver it before they knew that they wanted it, that's going to be the new normal. Mm-hmm. And so we as consumers, being serviced by this sort of thing, are going to be overwhelmingly delighted by the experience that we get from those companies that can do this. And anyone else that doesn't do this, doesn't deliver predictively to my demands and anticipate my needs, they're going to disappear and be irrelevant anyway. So it's actually, in many ways, I think going to be a tremendously positive experience, but we need to be very careful and we need to be vigilant as well.
We've been speaking to Chris Cerdak. He's author of Data Crush, How the Information Tidal Wave is Driving New Business Opportunities. Chris, thanks for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks so much.
AMA webinars provide 90 minutes of focused how-to instruction and specific solutions for solving your most pressing work issues. For $149, you'll participate in an in-depth course taught by an expert who will answer your questions and guide you through the process a step at a time. For a complete schedule of upcoming AMA webinars, visit our events calendar at amanet.org/events. Here at the AMA, we value your feedback. If you've ever attended any of our webcasts, webinars, or seminars, you've no doubt encountered our feedback surveys. Well, our podcasts are no different. You can either email us at podcast@amanet.org or call 800-697-3406. Your comments may become part of a future program. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.